Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun. Follow the Utah Grizzlies on Facebook for the latest on weekend home games, or visit utahgrizzlies.com for more. Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun.
The Sundance Film Festival runs January 22nd to February 1st. Visit sundance.org/locals to register or purchase tickets.
I'm Alec Cregan. I'm a Slug staff writer, and you're listening to Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, covering music, lifestyle, arts, and events. This episode, we'll be talking to Utah House Minority Leader Brian King. Representative King is from Salt Lake City. Thank you for joining us today. So how is life post-election season?
Well, it's been busy because we had about 2 weeks after the regular election, we had our leadership election, and I ran for leader of the caucus and was elected. And since the leadership election, we've been sort of doing a lot of things to transition from one leadership team to the other as of the first of the year. So that's coming right up. So, you know, it's been busy.
Yeah, no, definitely. One of the things in the podcast here, we kind of focus towards young people in Utah. So is there any legislation that's coming up that you think will drastically affect, you know, young Utahns?
Well, that's a good question. I think that Medicaid expansion, the question about whether we adopt the Governor's Healthy Utah Plan, has the potential mm-hmm. to really impact young Utahns. Individuals who are making within the range of up to 138% of the federal poverty level potentially have the ability to get great benefit if we do expand Medicaid. If we don't, they'll have the possibility of not getting access to affordable health care through the expansion of Medicaid. And that's something that I think most Democrats feel strongly about. Mm-hmm. It's certainly something I feel strongly about, that we need to expand Medicaid to the greatest extent possible. Full expansion would be the best. Politically, that's not really feasible. Governor Herbert has come along with his Healthy Utah proposal, which he's worked very hard in the last few months to run past the Obama administration and get the Obama administration sign-off for. He's done a good job, I think, in terms of trying to come up with sort of a Utah spin on Medicaid expansion that would be palatable to the Obama administration and also pass muster with the right wing here in Utah and in mm-hmm. the state legislature. We don't know whether that's going to pass, but I think that, off the top of my head, that will probably have the greatest impact on folks who are just coming up, you know, in mm-hmm. terms of establishing themselves and may not have access to affordable health care except for the subsidies that are provided through the expanded definition of Medicaid. So we're going to work hard to try and give that access to affordable health care, greater access to affordable health care to Utahns who right now are struggling to make ends meet at below 138% of the federal poverty limit.
The next question is there any legislation coming up that will drastically affect Utah as a whole?
Well, I think that's a huge one, that Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. It's not just a question of providing access to affordable health care for individuals who don't have it right now. It's a question of economic development. There are hundreds of millions of dollars that we would have coming back to the state of Utah if we opted into Medicaid expansion that, if we don't opt in, we'll just leave on the table. I mean, this is money that we've paid to the federal government in the form of our taxes as individuals in various forms of federal tax money that we would like to have come back to Utah, I think, if we had our way. And right now, the way many of my Republican colleagues sort of look at this and think, well, we don't care. We don't want to have anything to do with the feds. They're bad, bad, bad. We think that dependence on the federal government is bad, and we think that federal spending is unsustainable. And I mean, the reality is that if we don't accept this money that is being offered to us by the federal government for the next 2 years, it'll be the complete costs of Medicaid expansion will be paid for by the federal government. We're just on the verge of walking away from that money and saying, thanks, but no thanks. And, oh, by the way, all these people who would otherwise enjoy the benefits of getting access to affordable health care through Medicaid expansion won't get it. And these are people who need it badly oftentimes. They can't afford to get to a physician or hospital on their own right now. They don't have the resources for it. They don't have insurance for it. So, you know, my hope is that we're going to be smart fiscally as well as humane. The humane part is just getting access to affordable health care to people who don't have it right now. But the fiscally smart part is bringing the money back to Utah that we've already paid to the feds, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we think of ourselves as the best managed state in the country, the most fiscally responsible state in the country. This action that the legislature is on the verge of taking, of rejecting Medicaid expansion money, gives a lie to that whole idea. I mean, it betrays this whole idea about being fiscally responsible and being wise with our budget dollars. It's stupid. So I hope, I really fervently hope in our session that we're going to do the right thing, both fiscally and for the benefit of Utahns.
So far, the governor's budget proposed an increase in education funding. Do you see an increase in education funding at all this year?
I do. I think we're going to have that, because we've got surpluses that we haven't had for, well, I've been in the legislature since 2009. We've never had surpluses like we're going to be having this year and projected into the future. It's a great thing. I think there is enough feeling among the legislators, and certainly with the governor, we need to increase our resources for public and higher education. We need to stop the rate of increase for tuition, for example, for higher education. That's gone up significantly over the last 5 or 6 years, and it needs to be stopped. We need to make higher ed more affordable for Utahns. We also need to provide more resources for public ed for Utahns in terms of spending more money, actually, when you get right down to it, if you want to be direct. And I know elected officials are reluctant to talk about this in some ways, because it means either raising new revenue or using new revenue or using old revenue for public education, and a lot of people don't like to do that. But I am very much committed to the idea that any additional surplus money we have ought to be directed first and foremost to public education. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing we need right now.
Absolutely. Outside of Medicaid expansion, what do you expect to be the most talked about bill or the most controversial bill for this year?
Well, it'll be interesting. I think folks that are listening to Slug are going to be interested in anti-discrimination issues, pushback from the same-sex marriage debate. We'll see that. Mm-hmm. We'll see some pushback. We'll see some conservatives want to say, we don't care what the Supreme Court or the Tenth Circuit says on this. We don't care that in the last year we've seen this really incredible, remarkable wave of movement toward same-sex marriage being recognized and legitimized, starting, of course, with Utah a year ago and Judge Shelby's ruling. But, you know, now we've got more than 30 states, I think, that have said, yeah, we're going to recognize this. We're going to allow individuals an opportunity to have their same-sex marriages solemnized and recognized by civil authorities, and that's a great thing. But in Utah, of course, many of my colleagues up there want to, that's the last thing they want. So I think what we're going to see is some folks run some bills to try and put up some boundaries and that kind of stuff.
Right, like I believe it's HB 66 right now, it's the marriage amendments.
Yeah.
I think it's Andrake running that right now, which is kind of giving shelter to not just people that have the ability to marry people, but people that are elected to marry people.
Yeah, that's an interesting bill. And part of it I don't really have a problem with. I mean, I've talked to Representative Andrew about this, and part of it just basically reaffirms the idea that I think everybody accepts and recognizes, that we shouldn't be compelling ministers or church officials to marry individuals that their faith objects to being married. You know, look, if you want to pass a statute that says that no Catholic priest or LDS bishop or other church leader needs to or is required to marry someone within the church or within their organization that they have religious objections to marrying, nobody cares about that. That's fine, and I think that's clear under the law as it is right now. The thing that troubles me about this is that Representative Andrick wants to go the next step. He wants to say, or at least a next step, and say, if a public elected official or a public appointed official, if someone who is there as a civil public servant has personal religious objections to marrying someone, they don't have to do it so long. And I say, well, Jake, you can't. I've had just personal conversations with Jake. And I said, Jake, you can't do that. I mean, and he said, well, it's okay, because what we will do is allow individuals within, for example, the Salt Lake County Clerk's office, if you have 7 individuals there and 5 of them want to object, there are still 2 that are in a position to do that. I said, no, dude, we can't go down this road. I mean, you can't let publicly elected or publicly appointed officials whose job it is to look out for the public interest bring into that whole arena their personal religious beliefs and allow that to influence what they do as a public official. It just doesn't work.
Right.
And he and I just don't see eye to eye on that. So we'll see what happens with it.
So with Republicans having such a large majority in the legislature, potentially calling it a rubber stamp legislature in terms of that, why should Utahns potentially care about what's going on in the Capitol Hill?
Well, that's a good question, because I think that is one of the reasons, when you get right down to it, the lack of competitive races and the overwhelming one-party control in our political circumstances in Utah, I think is one of the main reasons that we don't have greater levels of political activity. We don't have greater levels of turnout on Election Day. We have high levels of apathy. There's a feeling that, you know, what I do doesn't matter. I just think that, and it's easy to understand how people would feel that way, but there's no question that when people show up at the Capitol in numbers and they make their voices heard, the legislature responds. We saw it a couple of years ago with the bill that dealt with grandma. I think it was 477. I can't remember the bill number right now, but it was John Dougal's bill in which they tried to modify the Government Records Access Management Act in a way that was really detrimental to the public interest and individuals' interest in the media. And, of course, the media got excited about that. One of the reasons that it was easy to get folks up to the Capitol, relatively speaking, is that the media was banging the drum. Well, the point that I'm making is, however they got up there, when people show up in mass at the Capitol and they let the legislators know how they feel, legislators don't ignore that. They respond. My hope is that one of the things that we'll see with, for example, Healthy Utah and Medicaid expansion is people come to the Capitol, let us know how they feel about it, and the legislature will respond. You know, apathy doesn't accomplish anything other than allow inertial forces to continue along. If we in Utah want to continue to have one-party domination, I guarantee that it will be assured if people say, well, there's nothing I can do about that, and throw up their hands and don't do anything. On the other hand, if people have an attitude that to some extent I do, which is, I refuse to live in a state like this, and I'm not leaving, I'm going to make my voice heard, that will, if enough people have that attitude and that feeling and stand up and take action, you'll see change. So I don't think it's easy. I don't think that it's necessarily something that happens quickly or immediately, the kind of change that I would like to see and that I think most Utahns, when you get right down to it, would like to see. But it occurs because individuals and small groups take action together in a unified way and make their voices heard. That's the only way change happens. And we need to do that in Utah. I think there can be some things that would help that happen. I'd like to see some large organizations come out and say, look, the status quo, the way things are right now, it's just unacceptable, whether it's in the area of clean air or public education or public lands, or there are all sorts of things that I wish we had greater numbers of people who were willing to stand up and say, we refuse to live in a state like this, and we're not going to leave, and we're not going to accept it. We're not going to sit back and say, oh, well, what's on TV tonight?
With Democrats, so currently there's five in the Senate, 12 in the House, currently at a historic low. What are Democrats going to do to affect change in Utah?
Well, that's what we ask ourselves all the time. It's a great, it's the $64,000 question. I think we have to make sure as Democrats that we are addressing issues that Utahns care about. And we try to do that. I think economic issues are critical. I think this livable living wage issue is critical, for example. I am very troubled personally, and I have been for a long time, about this growing gap that we have between haves and have-nots. It's just absolutely unreasonable for people at the legislature to believe that an individual making minimum wage at a full-time job can be expected to make ends meet without suffering, you know? You can't work at a job where the amount that you earn in a year is $14,500, which is what full-time at minimum wage is, $7.25 an hour. If you have that job, I don't care where it is. It can be at Walmart, it can be at McDonald's, it can be at any large corporation or small corporation or business that you want. But if you have someone who's paying you at the minimum wage, there's no way that you can comfortably or feasibly make ends meet and provide for yourself, let alone a family, in a meaningful way. The cost of health insurance for that individual alone is going to be several thousand dollars a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got transportation, you've got housing, you've got food. I mean, it's just unrealistic to expect that minimum wage is going to cover what people need. So as a consequence, we support, as Democrats, increasing the minimum wage to a point where it's what we call a living wage. And it's not like that's 20 or 30 bucks an hour. I mean, we're talking about $10 an hour, in the range of $10 to $11 an hour. I think that's important. I think people in Utah, especially, of course, those who are in this range that I'm talking about, who are earning $7 or $8 an hour, look at that kind of an initiative at the legislature, and if they are paying attention, if they're aware that it's even going on up there at all, I can't help but believe that they're going to say, oh yeah, I like that. Let's, please help me make, rather than $7.25 an hour, help me get up to $10.50 an hour, for example. That'll make a difference in the quality of my life. And it won't make much of a difference in terms of decreasing our ability, the rest of society's ability, the rest of Utah's ability to purchase necessary products and services at reasonable costs. I think I've seen information that say that, you know, if you move up the wages of McDonald's servers from $7.25 an hour to $10.50 an hour, for example, it'll add to the cost of a Big Mac by, you know, a few cents. Well, big deal. I mean, you know.
I don't know. That nickel is quite important to me.
Well, for someone making a minimum wage, you're absolutely right. We laugh about it, but it's true. And I mean, you know, these things add up. But I don't want to be insensitive to the fact that if you increase the minimum wage, you do increase somewhat the cost of doing business for the businesses that are required to pay it. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
You may even, I would acknowledge, cause some businesses to have to cut back a little bit. But I think the benefit of having a minimum wage increase across the state would far outweigh the losses that may exist for businesses who have to cut back a little bit. I mean, it's just, to me, a no-brainer. And I especially think that's true when individuals who currently make minimum wage are required to go to the government and rely on government welfare services to provide for their needs. I mean, you have this guy or woman who makes minimum wage in order to get health insurance, they're going to qualify for Medicaid a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who's paying for that? You know, it's regular working folks. So I think that we all do better when we all do a little better.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the lines, I think, from Paul Wellstone or somebody. I can't remember who said it. We all do better when we all do better. I think that's absolutely true. I mean, let's distribute more equitably and more fairly. It sounds like socialism. Well, you know what? It is socialism in a very real sense.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that I don't have a problem with saying, if we want to maintain the quality of life that we have here in Utah and in the United States as a whole, we better make darn sure that the benefits that are available to the very, very top dogs, the 1% and above in the pyramid, are available to a reasonable degree to those who allow and facilitate the 1% to have what they have, which is labor,
mm-hmm.
individuals who are doing hard work at the ground level of the pyramid, people who clean our homes, people who work in our fast food restaurants, the servers at our nice restaurants, the people who mow our lawns and clean our streets and maintain our sewer systems. I mean, all those folks, these are hardworking folks. They may make minimum wage, they may make more. They may make $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year. But they're people who deserve to make sure that, who are deserving of higher compensation, in the sense that this gap that I think has grown so dramatically in the last 30 years between the haves and the have-nots, that kind of gap threatens the welfare of everyone in society if it gets large enough.
Don't miss your chance to discover independent films and artists at the Sundance Film Festival, returning to Utah this January 22nd to February 1st. Locals can purchase the new Grand Theater Pass today, as well as register for individual Sundance tickets. Visit sundance.org/locals to register or purchase tickets.
I'm Rebecca.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Cherry. And if you like your geek news with a bit of a twist, then you'll love
Hello, Sweetie!
Hello, Sweetie podcast brings you the latest and greatest geek news and information from an all-female panel.
We'll bring you the most recent information about movies, TV, comic books,
video games, roller derby, pop culture, and more. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
For your weekly dose of geek culture from a female perspective, tune in to
Hello, Sweetie!
the Utah House recently had a change in leadership, as you said, which, by the way, congratulations on your election.
Thank you.
So one of them being Speaker Lockhart moving on to being a private citizen, and then now the election of Speaker Hughes. Do you anticipate any, like, change in leadership style?
Oh, yeah. Sure. I mean, Representative Lockhart was a friend. I got along well with her, with Becky, and I'm a very good friend with Representative Hughes. Greg and I we've gotten along for a long time. I think we relate well to each other. Greg is someone who, when he comes at you, he's got his, you know, if he's coming at you in a fight, he's got his knife extended and very visible to you. He does not embrace you and then put a knife in your back. And I like that about him. He's very direct. I think I have that same style myself. And we've talked a number of times since both of our elections about the fact that we're going to be direct with each other up on the Hill in this coming session. There'll be times I've said to him, there'll be times when I'm really going to be pissed off at you. And there'll be times when you'll feel the same way about me. And he said, oh, I don't know. We'll have our disagreements about things. But, you know, it's never personal. And it isn't. I really do like Greg personally. But there'll be times when we disagree. And it'll be open and public in disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't be personal. Yeah. There's a big difference.
No. I figured so. And then finally, if people want to learn more about upcoming bills or they want to learn about their own legislator, where can they go?
Well, the Utah State Legislature's website has is a great website. It's a great resource, and it's been something that has gotten awards across the country. So you just go to le.utah.gov, www.le.utah.gov. You can track a bill if you've got a bill that you're interested in. You can set up a little thing to get regular emails saying, here's what's going on with your bill. You can find out what committee hearings are being held. You can find out when we're in, you know, on a particular day, what committees are meeting and where they're meeting, or when we're having our floor debate. You can see what bills are on schedule on the board to be debated. You can listen audio to the audio recording of committee hearings. You can get a subscription to a video and audio feed of our floor proceedings in both the House and the Senate. It's really pretty cool.
I love it. I'm on it like at least once a week these days.
Yeah. And there are a lot of documents that are available. As you know, Alex, when you want to look at what documents we have available to us that are prepared by our staff or that are prepared in the form of proposed bills, you can click on and see the actual text of the proposed bill that's being discussed. So it's remarkable the degree to which you can be, you know, up to speed on what we're talking about in real time as we're doing it.
Well, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Slug Soundwaves. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Send us suggestions of what you'd like to hear on the show by emailing us at soundwaves@slugmag.com or hit us up on Twitter @SlugSoundwaves. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, Christian Schultz, Henry Glashine, and John Ford. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our show's theme was performed by Temples. Our main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd. And the technical design was by Kate Colgan. Next week on the show, we'll feature comic book creator Matt Miner and Chris Hoffman leading up to FanX. Thanks for listening.